I'm really honored that you guys invited me back. I was here way back when it was at Minute Maid, and I've seen you guys most of the years in the last few. And again, I'm a hand and upper extremity surgeon. I kind of go up to just past the elbow. But I'm really glad to be here this morning, so thanks so much. And today I'm going to talk to you about basically more finger injuries, essentially, that we tend to come across in sports. And really, you see them in any particular sport. In fact, just in the last month, I've treated a rugby player, I've treated a softball player, I've treated basketball players, and a gymnast. And it's kind of helpful to think of these injuries in a couple of different ways. They're either tendon injuries, ligament injuries, or joint injuries, and then bony injuries. And there's definitely some overlap between those. And so first we'll start talking about tendon injuries, and these can broadly be classified as to either flexor tendon injuries or extensor tendon injuries. Flexor tendon injuries that we'll talk about today are a jersey finger, or more technically known as an FTP avulsion injury. Extensor tendon injuries will be either a mallet finger, or an injury at the DIP joint, or a traumatic boutonniere, which is an injury to the extensor tendon at the PIP joint. Thankfully, you guys are not going to have to worry about that kind of tendon injury too often. So it's really, I think if you understand the tendon anatomy, and it's just like anything else, if you understand the anatomy, you can understand how to examine someone for a hand and or finger injury, and you understand what potentially the problems that may happen. So there are two flexor tendons to every digit. You have the flexor digitorum superficialis. That's going to attach right here, right at the PIP joint, and serve to flex the PIP joint. Flexor digitorum profundus is the one that's going to go all the way out and flex the DIP joint. On the extensor tendon side, it's a little bit more complicated in that you have, your extensor tendon will come down from your hand onto the finger here. Part of it inserts right here just at the level of the PIP via the central slip. And that is predominantly the extensor of the PIP joint. Via the lateral bands, the rest of the extensor mechanism will insert out here at the DIP to extend the DIP, and that's what gets injured as part of a mallet finger. In general, flexor tendon injury universally needs surgery. Extensor tendon injuries, at least if they're not penetrating injuries, will usually be treated with splinting. So it's very different treatment for the two. So first, talking about a jersey finger, it's named because this oftentimes happens when a player is grabbing onto another player's jersey. But the technical term is an FTP avulsion injury. And again, what we were talking about, FTP comes down, travels here through a split in FDS to come out and attach on the distal phalanx and help bring down the DIP joint. So what happens is that as the digits forcefully flex, something jerks it into extension, tears off that distal attachment. The problem is that the flexor tendon is contained within this pulley system right here, and once it's detached, it has a knack to just slide all the way down here into the palm. That's where they usually end up. So again, what we talked about, it's a flex digit that then gets jerked straight and tears off the extensor tendon the flexor tendon attachment. Patients will be unable to make a real complete fist, and they won't be able to actively flex the DIP. Most of the time it's the ring finger, but a soccer player of mine that I just fixed last week was a small finger, so it can happen to any of them, but usually it's the ring finger. And the key with this, and that's most important to realize, that these need surgery. These don't need, okay, go see your primary care and then end up to me. Like, they need surgery within really ideally 2 weeks. I mean, I fixed him and he was approaching 3 weeks, but that's getting to where sometimes these aren't repairable, or because after they sit in the palm for a while, it's hard to get them all the way out, all the way back out to the distal phalanx where they attach. So this is what you'll see on the exam. If you ask them to really make a tight fist, everything will come down fine, but one will stay straight. The other thing is, when you're testing for flexor tendon function, you don't just ask them to do this, and we'll talk about this in the small group session, breakout sessions, but you want to isolate the actual joint and say, okay, flex that, and if you do, you'll get nothing out here at the distal, at the DIP. Now, sometimes they'll have a fracture with it. Rather than just pulling off the tendon, it'll pull off a piece of the distal phalanx. That's a little less common. So again, these need surgery. What has to happen, they have to get pulled back out through the pulley system. Here you can see the tendon right here, the pulley right here. They get pulled all the way back out to the distal phalanx. And the way that I fix it is I fix it with a little suture anchor and a button. So they literally will have what looks like a shirt button on the back of their nail for about 6 weeks. And the issue with these is that it's hard for them to really play sports during this time. They're in this splint I'll show you a picture of for 6 weeks. And it can take for full return, especially for any gripping type of sport. I had a quarterback, before I let him really grip the ball, it was close to 3 or 4 months. And hand therapy is crucial for these. My part's only really maybe 30-40% of how they ultimately do. They all need a hand therapist to help them get their motion back. Again, they're splinted in this ridiculous contraption for like 6 weeks plus. And again, probably 4 months before I would let them, say, rock climb or water ski. Mallet finger. This is super common. This happens when the fingertip strikes something, usually a ball, a wall, a player, something, and it forces the digit flexed, and sort of basically the opposite force than for the FDP avulsion injuries, and this will tear the extensor tendon insertion right here on the distal phalanx. Sometimes they have a fracture, sometimes they don't, but this is what they'll look like. They have this droopy end of the finger where it rests in kind of a flexed position. And here's just a diagram of what happens. The extensor tendon here inserting right here at the base of the distal phalanx. Finger is forced, flexed, and the tendon pulls off. And again, sometimes it pulls this sort of chunk of bone off, and sometimes not. It's impossible to tell just by looking at it which it is. And treatment, at least for me with these, is almost always a splint. You definitely can pin them, but it essentially, the extensor tendon, unlike the flexor tendon, the extensor tendon hangs out in the area. It doesn't slide back into the hand like the flexor tendon does. So as long as you can hold the DIP straight for 6+ weeks, the tendon will actually reattach. And the fracture will heal. Now, if they have a big fracture and the joint's out of place, then sometimes those will need to be pinned. But most of these just end up in a splint. I like the therapy-made splints, these little custom little splints, sometimes a little clamshell splint with a tape, to kind of help pull the DIP into as much extension as possible. I don't like these as much. They tend to be one size fits like some people, but so I tend to send them, especially if they're athletes, for a therapy made splint. Issue with pinning is that you have a risk of infection. I had a neurosurgeon decide to go to Alaska and fish and got some weird, like, Alaskan water bug into his finger. And so, you know, if they can at all tolerate the splint, I generally do that. And I let them play sports. I let them play whatever in the splint. But the key is here, this is not one of these splints, like, oh, wear it, take it off to shower. They've got to be in it 24/7. It's the most annoying part of the whole thing. 24/7 for 6+ weeks of full-time splinting, followed by nighttime splinting. So I'm going to spend some time on PIP injuries because I think these are the trickiest ones to understand and sometimes to treat. These are your jammed fingers usually, and they can range anywhere from just a little sprain to a fracture and a dislocation. And within this sort of sprain category, this is where there's this overlap of like a ligament injury and a tendon injury, because you can have this tricky injury called a traumatic boutonniere, which is actually a tendon injury here. That is hard sometimes when, and even for me, and this is all I see all day, every day, to distinguish that from a basic sprain sometimes is difficult. So I jammed my finger. Well, what do you do? Well, sometimes it's hard. I've looked at them and I've said, oh, that's probably nothing and it's been broken. And then I've looked and said, oh, that's probably broken and it's not. So it's really hard just by looking at it to know what you're dealing with. But this, if you can take away anything from this, anything that you need to pull on, like they come off the field, fingers janky, and you pull on it, that needs an x-ray. I don't care, you know, if they can move it right away, that needs an x-ray because it is impossible to know whether or not, probably it was a dislocation, and even if it moves well, it can have a fracture that impacts ultimate treatment. So 100% of those need an x-ray. They don't need it that night, they can go, you know, in the next day or two, but they need an x-ray. But the ones that you're not necessarily pulling on, they say, oh, my finger hurts. If they have bruising, and they, especially if they have any difficulty really moving the digit in the next couple of days, probably needs to be looked at. Maybe nothing, and I can send them back to you and you can work on getting their motion back. But it's, again, hard to tell. But look, if they, the next day after the dust settles, if they've got full motion, no bruising, they're probably okay. When in doubt, just have me take a look at them. But anyway, so traumatic boot in ears. This is a disruption of the central extensor insertion here on the middle phalanx. So this is the part of the extensor tendon that helps to pull up the PIP joint, and what happens is that it gets torn. So kind of like a mallet finger, but for the PIP. The problem is that the lateral bands, which are the ones that kind of extend out here to give you the DIP extension, those start to slip volar. And what happens is that you have no ability to pull up or extend the PIP, but all this force is going still to extend the DIP. So they get this position to their finger. PIP gets really flexed, and the DIP starts to get extended. And so these are sometimes tricky, but usually they'll be, and this is again understanding where your anatomy is, they'll usually be point tender on the top, on the dorsal, right there where the central slip inserts, rather than in a classic sprain where they'll be more tender kind of on the collateral ligaments or the side. These are usually more focally tender on the top, and you can usually ask them to tell them which hurts more. And then they'll also have the decreased strength or decreased ability to kind of pull up the PIP. And sometimes they'll have a fracture too. Now these, again, usually just need to be splinted, but there's two parts of treating these. One, you need to splint the PIP up so that the extensor tendon can reattach. Two, you need to stretch these lateral bands out, because once they slip volar and get tight, it's fighting against the ability to get your PIP up. So you got to do what are called lateral band exercises. And I usually, the splints don't really look like this. I usually have the therapist make a custom sort of clamshell splint for the PIP. But the DIP is left free. So they live in this, and then they come out of that splint to do specific DIP flexion exercises. So you hold the PIP straight, and they're allowed to bend just the DIP. And that's the key for that, and they're usually splinted for 6 weeks, but again, can play in the splint. So PIP sprains are your most common injury. Again, they're usually tender kind of over the collateral ligaments on the side. And these, I always tell people the PIP does not take a joke very well. It is swollen sore for 6 to 9 months. And people look at me like I'm nuts when I tell them that, but it's 100% true. The patients that have wedding rings, I tell them don't get it resized for about 6 to 9 months. And once you've ruled out the bad stuff, the traumatic boutonnieres that need to be splinted or a fracture that needs to be protected, once you know that that's not the case, do not splint these. These need to move. You buddy tape these. You got to get them moving. I see this coming from the ER, where they'll get x-rayed, no fracture, and they'll be put in these big aluminum splints that splinted for 3 or 4 weeks, and then go see somebody. And I see them universally at 4 to 6 weeks as they can't move their finger, and it's super stiff. So these definitely need to get moving. And the problem is that it's a little counterintuitive. It hurts, so they don't want to move it, so they splint it. But then it hurts when they move it, so they don't move it. And it just gets down this sort of downward spiral where they end up with a super stiff joint. So buddy taping is great for these. It allows some protection from that side-to-side motion that tends to re-aggravate that collateral ligament injury, but allows them to move it. And you can either do that with the Velcro buddy loops or just plain old athletic tape. So dislocations, fracture dislocations, these will happen in one of two directions. Dorsal is by far the most common, volar much less common. These are the ones that will oftentimes, they'll come off the field, their finger looks kind of jacked up, and then you pull on it and it seems to be better. And you guys have an opportunity, and I don't mind necessarily if you try to pull on it and try and get it back in, because you have an opportunity with that fresh injury to get it back in. Volar ones are tough. I mean, it's really hard to recognize these. I still don't mind if you try, but sometimes these you can't get in. And then also with the dorsal dislocations, in the extreme cases, it can actually be open, where the volar skin kind of pops open and you'll actually see the condyles of the proximal phalanx. So again, here's the dorsal dislocation, and they're named based on where the distal portion goes. So here the distal portion of the joint is up dorsal, here it's down volar. And this is oftentimes what the dorsals will look like. They kind of just have a little bit of a gradual bend, but again, hard to know. That could definitely be a fracture. So it's hard to know. Again, I don't mind if you try to straighten it. I'm not gonna fuss at that. So the maneuver to get these back in, I mean, usually traction will work, but it's nicer if you can do this little maneuver where you hyperextend it just a little bit. You hyperextend it, what you're trying to do is you're trying to perch the articular surface of the middle phalanx kind of right on the border of the proximal phalanx and then kind of flip it over. And these, as long as there's no fracture, I splint them for a week to let the dust settle, and then I get them moving, and it's buddy tapes after that. Now, the Volar ones, I'm mentioning this because it's kind of interesting and academic, but you're not going to run. I see maybe one a year of these. And these can be subtle. This was missed in the ER. You know, if you look at this joint, it looks just not quite the same as this one. There's a little gapping here. It's sitting just a little bit off here, but very subtle. And here what you'll see is, and these, they won't be able to move their finger very well at all. There's a little dimpling of the skin, and what happens a lot with these is when they pop out or they kind of fall down volar, what happens, they drag a portion of the extensor mechanism, in this case the lateral band, gets dragged into the joint, and that's why you can't get it back up. So a lot of times I'll actually have to open these in order to get them back in place. Fracture dislocations, and again, it's impossible to know when a joint's been dislocated whether or not there's a fracture with it just by looking at it. But these are less stable, and this is the problem, is that I had a softball player was pulled, you know, dislocated her finger, was pulled back in, seemed to be okay, then re-dislocated a week or two later and wasn't evaluated because she had a fracture with it. And that's the problem, is that when you have a fracture with it, it makes the inherent sort of bony stability here much worse, and so they're more apt to re-dislocate. Now, if the fracture fragment's large and the joint's persistently unstable, sometimes these need surgery, but sometimes they may just need a splint. I mean, here's an example. Here, again, it's dislocated dorsally. Here's the volar kind of fragment. So here the volar plate has kind of remained attached to this piece. The rest of the bone's dislocated dorsal, and back in a splint, in a little bit of flexion, you can see it's nice and congruent and everything lines up nice, and that'll heal fine, and that does not need a surgery, but some of them do. Now, once they've kind of, we've had ruled out sort of bad injuries, or they've had their, you know, dislocation splinted for a week, or their fracture is kind of healed, the rehab for these is not just a simple, okay, just go, like, move your hand. There's two problems that kind of tend to develop, and the main thing is PIP extension. It's very easy for them to lose that full extension. So part of getting their motion back is to specifically work on stretching out their PIP. And then also, you know, you can do the kind of basic, these are sort of what I call my six-pack exercises, you know, finger extension, tabletop, the claw, and basic fist, and then just thumb opposition. But I think blocking exercises are really great, and these are easy to do. You stabilize the whole finger and you isolate each, the DIP as well as the PIP, to get each joint moving independently. Just a word on skier's thumb. I mean, it's technically called gamekeepers, but really the more traumatic injuries, really a skier's injury. If you're holding a pole, fall skiing, and it jerks the thumb back. This also just happens if anybody falls onto a thumb, pulls the thumb back, and they can tear the ulnar collateral ligament here at the MCP. And they'll have, and the beauty of the hand is that you have a normal one to compare it to. It's very hard to tell necessarily what's the normal amount of stability for this, but if you compare it to the other side and there's asymmetry and they're tender over, especially that ulnar side of the MCP right here, you got to make sure that that's not an ulnar collateral ligament injury. Now, sometimes these can be splinted, but if they're completely torn, I almost always fix these. I think they get back faster. I don't have to cast them. I can splint them, and a lot of times can let them return to sport within about 4 to 6 weeks, protected. Now, I'm not going to say too much about fractures other than to say there's a whole ton of stuff that can get fractured in the hand. And it's so variable as far as how it gets treated. You know, from the standpoint of phalanx fractures, I mean, they can be teeny little avulsion fractures, and that gets treated just like a sprain, buddy tapes, get them moving, or big comminuted injuries that need surgery. And surgery can sometimes mean pins, and this is the other thing to be aware of, is that whereas with a scaphoid fracture, you know, wrist injury, a lot of times I'll get those at the end of football season because no player wants to be out for football season. So, oh, my wrist kind of hurts, but I'm okay. I'll go see the doctor in December. I mean, I can still treat him then. That's no big deal. The phalanx is different. That is healed in 3 weeks. I have 3 weeks to fix these if they need to be fixed. Really two, because at three, I mean, if I'm going to cast them, I only cast them for 3 weeks. So there's a real sense of urgency if they're going to need something done about it to get it done quickly, because they heal fast. And sometimes I just buddy tape them, sometimes I cast them, pin them. Sometimes we do these funky little kind of mini X-fixes. That's pretty rare, thankfully, because it's kind of a pain. But, as far as returning to sport after injuries, a lot of athletes can return to sport with either a cast, a splint, or taping. It just depends on the injury, depends on their needs. As an athlete, a lot of my linemen I can send back in cast, but a receiver, not so much. And then just a final word again on the PIP. It has a real tendency to get stiff, so as long as I say that we can move it, let's, go ahead and get it moving. So to summarize, hand injuries are common in a huge variety of sports. Recognizing them, treating them promptly, because again, they tend to heal fast, is really the key. And being aware, at least in the back of your mind, of these other kind of injuries, traumatic boutonnieres, these tendon injuries. Our treatment allows for enough healing and, to allow that early motion. Surgery sometimes, but not always, allows them to come back faster. Any questions?